Once upon a time, not so long ago.
Welcome, Chubby.
Thank you.
How are you?
How about introducing yourself? First, camera one.
I'm John Bon Jovi.
Hi, I'm Richie Sambora.
Alec John Such.
Tico Torre.
Hi, I'm Dave Bryan. How's it going?
Welcome to Rock and or Roll. I'm your reluctant host, BJ. That was a song called The Other Side of the Night by one of John Bon Jovi's early bands, a band called The Rest. Bon Jovi, as far as I can tell, are not a highly respected band, but in my opinion, it is absolutely ridiculous that Bon Jovi are not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I know the list is long, and they aren't near the top of that list even, but still, they do deserve the recognition for what they accomplished.
Shot through the heart, it's all part of the game that we call love. Would you be content to see me crying after those little games you put me through?
The Bon Jovi story really sort of begins with Tony Bon Jovi, who was an in-house engineer in the 60s, first at Motown's studio in Detroit and then at the record plant in New York City. In 1977, Tony Bon Jovi and several business partners designed and built the Power Station recording studio in New York. Tony Bon Jovi co-produced Leave Home and Rocket to Russia, the second and third Ramones albums, and the first Talking Heads album, among others. And Tony had a cousin named John Bon Jovi, who was an aspiring musician. And Tony let John work for him at the studio and eventually allowed John to use the studio on off hours to record demos of some of his material.
I saw you, girl, I knew that it wouldn't be long.
seems to me you're pretty much a heartthrob, the whole bunch of you nowadays. But what were you like in school? Were you geeks and nerds in high school?
I wore sunglasses in high school. Everywhere I went, I was a...
You weren't a nerd? Were you a
no,
nerd?
No, I didn't pay attention. I would come in from playing the clubs. I'm 23, so when I was 18 and sitting on the porch with those guys in Asbury, I was still in high school. I played the clubs till 3 in the morning, go to high school at 8 in the morning, and stay there till noon, and then go to bed. And yeah. Play the clubs.
The teacher let you sleep a couple hours for a mark at the end of the month.
Would your advice to young people be, if they want to get into a band, to just play, and sort of screw school?
No, not screw school.
You gotta pass.
You gotta get through school. I mean, school's a very important thing. You know, it's a good thing to know. There's nothing wrong with that. I personally just didn't like it. You know, I mean, I had no reason to be there.
Tony Bongiovi actually orchestrated his cousin John's first appearance on vinyl when Tony was tapped to produce a Star Wars Christmas album. So this is John Bongiovi at, I guess, age 15?
Arthur, where are you? Oh, there you are. Well, if you come over here, you'll find a wonderful surprise. You'll have to plug into the central computer to hear what it is. That's right. No, it's not a phase vector. It's your Christmas present.
I do need to wish you
According to what I have read, when John Bongiovi signed a record deal with PolyGram in 1983, Tony sued his cousin, and Tony's resulting settlement included a production credit, fee, and royalties from the first album, and also a 1% royalty rate on the next two albums. So if this is true, what it means is that Tony Bongiovi had a 1% stake in the royalties on Slippery When Wet.
It's tough.
Also, when Bon Jovi signed to PolyGram, it was only John that signed. And from what I've read, the rest of the band, once he put the band together, were simply his paid employees. That would be Richie Sambora, David Bryan, Alec John Such, and Tico Torres. John had secured the record deal based on the local success of a song called Runaway, which he had recorded with a different group of musicians, none of whom ended up in the band that became famous. I have been unable to confirm this, but Dave Sabo, or later Dave the Snake Sabo, did play with John in a band at some point and supposedly played guitar on recordings with John, but I do not know if he is on this version of Runaway.
Oh, you like, oh, you like.
Anyway, that version of Runaway was included on a 1983 compilation put out by New York rock radio station 103.5 WAPP. It was a record called New York Rocks, and it also included a song by a band called Twisted Sister. On that record, the song Runaway was credited to John with an H, Bon Jovi, the original spelling, B-O-N-G-I-O-V-I. And apparently once he signed to Polygram and put the band together, they almost went with the name Johnny Electric before someone suggested the Van Halen-esque Bon Jovi. That song, She Don't Know Me, would eventually end up on the first Bon Jovi album, but that version was recorded by John with his previous band, The Wild Ones. The song was actually written by Mark Avsek, who had been in Wild Cherry, and then went solo with Donny Iris, who was also in Wild Cherry. So Mark Avsek also wrote this song. When the first Bon Jovi album came out in early 1984, Runaway was a top 40 hit. It barely, it made it to number 39, and the record went top 50, peaking at 43 on Billboard. Those are not huge numbers, but they definitely meant a lot more back then.
Take you high.
Bon Jovi's second album, 7800 degrees Fahrenheit, or The Temperature at Which Rock Melts, supposedly, was released in March of 1985, and it charted a little higher than the first album, making it to number 37. The first single, Only Lonely, only made it to number 53. I like that song a lot. And the second single, In and Out of Love, made it to number 37. That's a really good song as well. And then the third single from 7800 degrees Fahrenheit, a great song called The Hardest Part is the Night, did not even chart.
All right. Well, look, talk to me about songs. I mean, what's your favourite? Writing the song, recording it, or playing it on stage? What's the biggest buzz you get?
That's a tough question.
Don't tell me you hate that too.
No. That's what it's all about.
We don't really like doing videos. Usually, they've just been falling into a situation where it's been a real hassle to do it because we're so busy touring and recording or something like that. It always seems to come at a very inopportune time, you know. But playing live and recording and writing the songs is a very satisfactory thing, you know.
You don't prefer one more than another?
It's just so tough. It's just the creative process is great and playing is great and it's all, you know.
All right, now I know you've just come in this morning from America. What have you been doing in America?
Touring.
With?
To death.
With?
Well, we're now with Rat.
Mm.
Again, since we left here on our own tour, we went back to the States and did our own headlining tour for about 6 weeks and then picked up with Rat. You know, now we're doing bigger venues together.
How are you finding that? Is it fun?
Oh, it's great. Yeah, we're a road band. Bon Jovi is a good rock and roll band. You have to see us live to really know what we're about, basically, because, you know, we just go out there and we start out 100 miles an hour and we end 100 miles an hour. Maybe we end 200 miles an hour.
Do you enjoy being on the road for such a long time?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you've just been in America, then this morning you're in England, then on Sunday you're going back again.
Oh, yeah, and Monday we play in America again. You know what I mean? It's right back to the road. The key with this album, and you know, I know that we've been slagged for it, you know, and they're saying, oh, this album. This album's already sold what the first one is and passed it. And but the key with seeing it live is it comes across, it gives me a chance to say, well, here's what this song is about, you know, and it's further explaining what Bon Jovi is as a band, you know, and what our audience is. In a 45-minute set, again, it's tough now that I've had to cut a two-hour thing to 45, you know. But it's getting the idea. Of course, it's like the Reader's Digest version, you know.
Black time.
Yeah, you know, here you go. Boom, it's over. But, you know, we love to tour.
Yeah, were you disappointed by some of the reviews you got? In England, especially in Europe, they said you'd softened up. You softened up, boys?
Oh, geez, not at all.
Yeah, I'm soft. I'm getting old.
No,
You take reviews with a grain of salt because I'm not here to please the critics. I'm here to please the kids, and I'm here to please me, you know, and I'm one of the kids, and that's the idea here. So we've proven it by, you know, going out and touring and selling tickets, and ultimately that's what matters. I mean, this year, after this tour is over in maybe November, December, we're going to take a bit of time, you know, instead of 4 days and right back in, you know, a new producer, new studio, maybe come over here to England to do the next one.
And so there they were, two really good albums under their belts, but not a lot of success sales-wise, not a lot of success on the charts. And so John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora got busy writing songs for the third album, In Richie's Mother's Basement.
Hold it on. And I
I guess it was the record company that brought Desmond Child into the picture, and at this point, he had really only played the song doctor role for Kiss, writing I Was Made for Loving You and then Heaven's on Fire with Paul Stanley. But the move sure paid off for Bon Jovi. John and Richie wrote two number one singles with Desmond Child, You Give Love a Bad Name and Living on a Prayer. We'll be right back. So Slippery When Wet, which was almost called Wanted Dead or Alive. They even had a cover ready to go with the band dressed as cowboys. The album was produced by Bruce Fairbairn, who John tracked down because he liked Bruce's work on the second Black and Blue album, Without Love. Slippery When Wet would be released August 19, 1986, and would eventually spend 8 weeks at number one, 38 weeks in the top five, and it would become the biggest selling album of all of 1987. Slippery When Wet is a fun record, but I'm not a huge fan of it beyond those two number one singles. I think both of those songs are great, but I also think Wanted Dead or Alive is awful. Raise Your Hands worked well in Spaceballs, and I'd Die for You is a pretty good AOR tune.
Stooges made you laugh yourself sick. The Fat Boys could put you in the hospital. In Disorderlies, this greedy nephew is having unhealthy thoughts about his rich uncle.
When he dies, I'm going to inherit everything.
What?
What I need are the worst orderlies in the history of nursing care.
This can't possibly be the new order test.
Is the world's noblest profession going to the dogs? But the Fat Boys aren't the heavies. Their job is to breathe new life into an old Palm Beach millionaire.
Stop the mouth!
And they're going to save him the best way they know how.
Put me down!
By accident.
You guys kill me. Another night like this and I'll die.
So relax. Get some rest. Eat properly. Drink plenty of fluids. And try to survive the Fat Boys. If the Three Stooges crack you up, the Fat Boys will fracture you. In Disorderly, they're three of the biggest heroes you'll ever meet.
There's a really cool song that John has acknowledged he regrets leaving off of Slippery When Wet. It ended up on the Disorderlies soundtrack. That was the Fat Boys movie. A song called Edge of a Broken Heart.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that the follow-up album to Slippery When Wet, although it does contain some clunkers, is the better of the two albums, in my opinion. New Jersey was released in September of 1988. It took 2 weeks for the album to hit number one, where it would stay for a month. New Jersey contained 5 top 10 hits, including 2 more number one singles for the band, Bad Medicine and I'll Be There For You.
Bye.
I like both of those songs a lot. In fact, I'm a big fan of four of those five top 10 singles. Born to Be My Baby and Living in Sin are also great, but Lay Your Hands on Me is a real turd. Instead, I think they should have opened the record with this awesome outtake from the sessions, a song called Judgment Day. My favorite song on New Jersey was not released as a single. It's an AOR masterpiece called Blood on Blood.
She took us to this gym.
honestly, side two of New Jersey is mostly mediocre, but overall, it's still a strong album. They definitely didn't choke, and it must have been a daunting task following up a juggernaut like Slippery When Wet. In the end, as big as it was, the album barely sold half as many copies as Slippery. It took Bon Jovi 4 years to release another album, and by that time grunge and alternative were happening, and John had cut his hair. Even so, the band managed to have a top 10 hit with a cornball ballad called Bed of Roses. Here's what I have to say about Keep the Faith. 3 of the first 4 songs are awesome. The first 2, I Believe and the title track, are great, and I love the 4th song, In These Arms.
Let's do In These Arms. Okay.
Ironically, I have little use for Bon Jovi after Keep the Faith. Alec John Such somehow betrayed the band's trust. If you've seen their behind the music, they make it sound like an episode of The Sopranos. So he was out, but the thing is, even though they replaced him with Hugh McDonald, who has been the band's bass player ever since, and supposedly Hugh McDonald is actually the bass player on that first Bon Jovi recording, Runaway, they never made McDonald an official member of the band. He's still with the band. He's been with the band for a long time now, but he's not in the pictures or the videos, and I think that's really fucking lame. But it harkens back to the whole idea that, as far as I know, Richie Sambora has always just been a paid employee of John Bon Jovi Incorporated, so who knows? So after Keep the Faith, the next album, These Days, pretty much sucked all the way through. I will admit to liking the comeback single from 2000 from the album Crush, a song called It's My Life, but I also don't care if I ever hear that song again. But I think Bon Jovi were a great band, and they made some great hard rock music. The first two albums are really good. I don't see how fans of hard rock and AOR would not be into those first two Bon Jovi records. And those singles, especially from Slippery and New Jersey, those are undeniable. Living on a Prayer is a brilliant piece of work, in my opinion. And Born to Be My Baby kicks ass. Bon Jovi should be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. End of story. And now, to play us out.
What does that mean, to play us out? I don't know what that means, to play us out. What does that mean? To end the show?
Yeah.
I'm going to leave you with the opening track from Keep the Faith, a great song called I Believe. Till next time.
Truth is all you have to have. And would you lie for?
be back.
We gotta hold on to what we've got. It doesn't make the difference if we make it or not. We got each other, and that's a lot for love.